Over the many years of managing and directing product development and innovation programs, I have found that every once in a while, I needed to put constraints on the resources that were available to my team. This forced my teams to think differently. I'll be right back.
This is the Killer Innovations Podcast with Phil McKinney. Keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are Phil's and Phil's alone, and they don't necessarily reflect those of his past, current, or future employers. Now, here's Phil McKinney.
Let's face it, we all tend to get caught up in the ruts of thinking. These ruts, this repetitive using of rules of thumb, using our lessons learned on the job, all started back in our early school days. What did they teach us? Memorize those multiplication tables. Memorize these facts and figures from this book. Use this formula that you learned last year to solve a problem next year. But sometimes those ruts in the business world get pretty ingrained and get pretty hard to get out of. Some of the ones that I've run into, and it's ones that I fight continuously and ones that I constantly have to reinforce with teams and companies that I'm involved with to change, are things like, what would customers like us want? Now, it's very rare that any company or any individual or even a small team, that those team members represent 100% of the target customers that you're trying to innovate and build a new product and service around. It's never a good assumption that you're that perfect fit for the target customer. And so therefore, trying to get into this rut of thinking that you know what the customer wants, the customer last year wanted it, and therefore they want it this year. The rut about what the customer wants is a very dangerous rut and one that tends to be very hard to get out of, particularly with a team or even with an individual who has been highly successful at building award-winning products. You know, they come out with that first product or that first new kind of service or that new capability, and immediately everybody flocks to them thinking that they can go repeat it again because they're so tuned in and know what the customer base wants. So that rut about what the customer wants can be a very dangerous one, and it's that rut that sometimes can lead you down those dark paths. What are some of the other ruts that you find with innovation projects? One is how long will this project take? Now, most organizations that I have found, they tend to want to put all of their projects into kind of this standard process. There's step one, step two, step three, going out to how many ever steps. And then the corporation and their program management teams and all the training, if you're in the program management certification programs, define about how many steps and how long each of those steps should take. Now, those tend to be used as rules of thumb. What you tend to find, though, is those projects then get heavily padded with extra time and that those projects take an exceedingly long time to deliver the end results. So the key there, again, is getting caught in this rut of getting standardized processes and standardized times and therefore letting that dictate how long it's going to take for you to develop whatever that innovation is. Another rut on the thinking is how many people and what skill sets do you need? You know, you need a project manager, you need someone with business development skills and marketing and sales and QA. And what you tend to find is all of a sudden a fairly simple project has a team that's consisting of 25, 30, I've seen them as large as 50 people on the project. As a general rule of thumb, I never allow the team to be larger than 12. Now that I've said that, I think I'm violating my own rule about not having rules. But what I have found is that projects that have 12 people or less are very manageable. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing, and everybody can understand how their piece plays. Now, the key with having and limiting projects to 12, and these can be very, very large projects, is that everybody is doing multiple tasks. You don't have these dedicated resources. You don't have, just because you're part of a huge organization and you've got all these different departments and you think you need to have one person from every department on a project, that does not apply. Again, that's getting caught up in the corporate thinking. You're letting a corporate organization structure about how you're organized to dictate the people that you have on your given team. Another one is how much will it cost? Again, this is kind of the thinking that gets caught up in the rut. So there's always the finance department and how they calculate, and everybody uses the standard loading cost for benefits above salary. In some cases, you may have a corporate tax on revenue that goes up to headquarters to fund the headquarters functions, for example. You may tend to use the percentage of numbers. So based on the revenue, here's what your, quote, acceptable expense numbers are in each category of your P&L. And that's kind of backing into the number, saying I'm going to target to hit this revenue, and so therefore, if I use a standardized formula, here's what quote acceptable expenses would be. Again, you're getting caught up in that kind of rut thinking and using kind of those rules of thumbs, the way you've always done it, this is the way we're organized, this is the way we calculate expenses, letting that be the piece that defines how you're going to go do these kinds of innovation programs. Now, what I have found is that by forcing constraints, going in there and setting a boundary about those kinds of resources that a team is going to have available, by forcing constraints, you're forcing the team to drop its assumptions, and you get them out of the rut, particularly if you're in a medium and larger organization. If you're in a startup, believe me, you've got more constraints than you know what to do with. The challenge here, though, is once you get into a medium-sized company that's going on, or you're kind of in the larger organization such as I am, you tend to get fat and happy, and those tend to be actually the things that will kill any kind of innovation. It takes too long. You've got too many people on a team. And in many cases, you may have too much money. Now, in this case, people who are probably listening to this podcast are going, oh my God, he's lost his marbles, he's off the deep end. And in some cases, people who actually either work for me or who are a part of the team at the organization that I am have definitely thought that I've lost the marble. But what I have found is that if you put these constraints on, you're forcing the team to think differently. Think against the typical way of how you're going to run a project, how you're going to staff it, how you're going to fund it, and how you're going to measure success. Now, the key on the constraints is that you can give, no matter, even if you're in the largest organization, you can give that startup feel. That feel of, hey, I've got a little bit of money, I've got to make this successful, I've got huge risks on me here that I've got my reputation on the line. Hey, if you're in a startup situation and you've left that nice cushy job and you go to that startup, guess what? You're risking everything. Not only your reputation, but also your livelihood, the ability to pay your bills, to be able to provide for your family. Believe me, those kinds of fears bring out a lot of creativity in you. So by putting these constraints, you can give that startup feel even to those medium and large size companies. Now, startups is not just about the culture. It's not the fact that, hey, there's you and three of your buddies sitting around the kitchen table brainstorming, or nights and weekends while you're doing your day job, coming up with that next great killer idea. There are clear benefits about having certain resource constraints. One is it brings focus. You know exactly what it is you got to go build. You know exactly how that's tied to a customer. And you know exactly how that's going to generate revenue. Because revenue is going to be able to get you paid and to pay your bills. Now, in the whole dot-com era and all of that, people kind of lost the fact that you got to generate revenue. And now we're kind of in this second cycle of the whole dot-com era, but you're seeing business plans and business cases in this situation where people can clearly take what they're doing and see where that business model is going to lead to the revenue. So it brings focus. You have to keep the path short between what you're doing, the customer, and how that's going to impact their lives, and what they're willing to pay you to have that impact on them. It also forces you to look differently at the options. When you have unlimited resources and unlimited money, you can typically just say, I'm going to throw bodies and money at it until I solve the problem. When you take those things away or you severely limit them, you all of a sudden get real creative at looking at options and looking differently at what options you have available to you. It also forces you to search for alternatives that fit within the constraints, whether that's resource headcount, dollars, timelines, geographies, whatever the constraint is. Once you've defined those constraints, then NEP defines the search domain for you to find those creative ideas, to have the ideation sessions focused on solving those particular constraints. Now, mid and large companies can do it. They can make this change, they can get creative, and they can put these constraints on their team. Now, the mid and large size companies suffer from the standpoint that they have the resources, both in dollars, in many cases, and in people, and they have the expertise. That's really not the issue. It's really about forcing the teams to change perspective. Now, we've talked about this many times in the previous podcast. Changing perspective is incredibly hard. It's almost something that you can't just do on your own. You have to be forced, either by having these constraints or by asking yourself the right set of questions that force you to look down a different path. And this really becomes the basis for really the killer innovation process, and more specifically, why I'm such a firm believer in the use of killer questions. By asking those right killer questions, the real purpose is to force you to think differently. By asking a question that you hadn't thought of previously, but forcing you to come up with ideas around or solving this particular killer question, it is driving you to change your perspective. It is forcing you to think differently. And believe me, I understand how hard it is to change the perspective. It is incredibly hard to do, but you have to do it in order to look for that next idea beyond the obvious. If you really want to come up with something different, if you really want to come up with that killer innovation that is just going to be a phenomenal success in the market, you got to think differently. So, if you're running a team, you're within an organization, and you want to drive those kinds of killer ideas, you need to challenge the team. You got to challenge yourself. You need to define a budget constraint. Now, when a team comes to you and says, hey, I need $5 million and I can go blow this out, or I've seen proposals on my desk that come to me and say, I need $50 million. You know what my answer is? Guess what? You get $200,000. Go make it work. Get me these early successes and show me how you're going to be successful. Go create a startup within the organization. You also need to place a constraint on the team size, because everybody automatically assumes that for me to be successful, I need to have a big team. And in some cases, in some organizations, now I don't see it where I'm at, but I've had it in my previous jobs at previous employers, that people tend to think about these new programs as a way to do kingdom building. So let me go get some money, I'm going to go off and create this new product or service, and oh, by the way, I'm going to build up this nice staff underneath me that report to me. And people tend to think that by having large staffs report to you, you therefore have ability to make things happen. So let me give you a little bit of my personal experience. In my previous job, the one actually prior to this one, the one I'm in now, when I left that company, I had total team reporting to me of about 1,300 employees. When I first came to my current employer, I specifically requested that I have zero reporting to me. And now I think, I don't know, I'm probably in the dozen range right now where I'm at that are reporting, that are somewhere in my organization structure reporting to me. Size of organization is not important. It's what you do with those resources. It's about giving those resources focus and giving them targets and being engaged with them that's going to drive impacts and it's going to deliver those killer ideas and those killer innovations. And you need to set deadlines. Time is a great constraint to bring focus. by using time, saying, you know, I need 18 months. Well, guess what? The market says you got to be in the market in 9 months. So we got to go figure out how you're going to be successful in delivering X in 9 months. So deadlines, time frames, holding people to it, creating that sense of urgency, creating an enemy. One of the other areas, as far as bringing focus is identify the enemy. Who is it you're going to go beat? Somebody that's in the market, your direct competitors, whatever. Go define and create the enemy. So again, challenge your team. Define a budget constraint. Place a constraint on the team size. Set a deadline. Again, by challenging this team, you're going to bring them focus. You're going to unleash their creativity to go find solutions that fit within those constraints. And by setting those constraints, you're forcing that team to change that perspective. And by changing perspective, you significantly improve the likelihood that that team is going to come up with that next killer innovation. As I mentioned before, one of the basic foundations of the killer innovation process is around killer questions. And the construct of killer questions is to get you to change your perspective. In today's podcast, we're talking about setting constraints and the use of constraints and asking the right set of questions to get you to change your perspectives, to get you to get your team to change their perspectives. So in this case, I'm actually going to give you three killer questions just as examples of how to create killer questions around these kinds of constraints. The first one, what would it take to make my product or service at half the cost? What would it take to make my product at half the cost? So rather than just assuming you know how to go build the product, what components have to go in it? How is that going to get delivered to the marketplace? Ask yourself, what would it take to make your product or service at half the cost? The second question, how could I cut the development time in half? If the team comes back and says it's 18 months, how do you deliver it in 9 months? How could I cut the development time in half? The third question, how can I deliver the industry-leading value chain for 50% less total cost to me? How can I deliver the industry-leading value chain at 50% less than what's costing me today? This includes everything from selling to support to maintenance, everything, that entire value chain. So rather than just looking at the cost for the product, look at the total cost of that value chain and how would you do it for 50% less? Now, these are not the only killer questions you should be thinking about. The key here is define the right set of constraints. And don't assume that what is a constraint and what's not a constraint. List everything and then develop the killer questions that are appropriate for your business. So in closing on the killer questions, what are the right constraint questions for your project? Consistency in thought has its benefits. It's predictable, we're comfortable, we can predict exactly where our thinking process goes to. But consistency can become repetition, which could lead to what I call brittle thinking. And what I mean by brittle thinking is lack of flexibility. You know those people that are kind of always go down the same path and the same thinking process. And as soon as you ask them to change that thinking process, everything falls apart. It's very brittle. Their entire logic chain is built on that predictable thinking pattern. And when you ask them to change, their whole process falls apart. That is what I would call brittle thinking. This week's closing thought is a quote that challenges all of us not to get caught in this brittle thinking or in this rut of thinking. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And with that, thanks for listening. I know this podcast is going to come out shorter than the previous podcast. I'm doing this based on some feedback from some of the listeners who are asking for maybe shorter podcasts so that they could actually get them digested in smaller chunks than typically the 30 to 45 minute podcast as it is normally. So I'm interested in your feedback. If you appreciate the shorter formats or do you want to go back to the longer ones? As you can tell, I'm trying to fine-tune the podcast. Now that we've got over 60 shows out there, we're getting a lot of new listeners. So I'm interested in what's working and what's not working. And again, I'm open to criticism, and I'm open also, obviously, to encouragement. So send me your feedback. You can email me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can also Skype me at Phil_McKinney. You can also connect with me via LinkedIn. Just send me an invite to the podcast@killerinnovations.com email address from LinkedIn. Please do note that you are a listener to the podcast because I do get lots of invites. And unless I know you or I know that you're a listener to the podcast, I typically would not accept. Don't forget to vote for your favorite podcast. Go out to podcastalley.com. And vote for your favorite podcast. It's the easiest way for you to let the producers of your favorite podcast know that you do appreciate all the effort that they put in. Also, as a reminder, we have the competition going on. We are looking for your creative ideas on the best way to promote the Killer Innovations podcast. Now, the podcast is open through the end of August. Submissions must be in by the last day of August, midnight Pacific Coast time. We will evaluate those ideas submitted, and we also, based on the results of those, we will award two copies to the top two winners. We'll each receive a copy of the entire card deck set of all the killer questions, both those that have been here in the podcast, but there's many on the card deck that have not yet been shared on the podcast as we're going forward. There have been some great submissions. One in particular, we've got a 15-second promo in, audio promo that we can use with other podcasts that is extremely creative, and I'm really impressed. We've also gotten some 30-second audio promos. Some of them are more along the lines of just, you know, people putting an audio promo about their thoughts about the podcast. We've also gotten some great ideas on viral programs. I've heard some emails from some people that they're working on some creative artwork. So this is kind of an open-ended. So this is your opportunity to use your creativity. And the task here is to come up with the best way to promote the Killer Innovations podcast. And remember, you have until the end of August to submit that. And email the submissions to podcast@killerinnovations.com. As you know, I'm now kind of on this every other week with the podcast. I'm trying to get back onto every week, but the relocation to California is becoming a little bit challenging. So I'm going to try to get back on week to week, but just so you know, it will never go more than every other week as I'm trying over the next month or so to get settled here to California. So please bear with me, and I appreciate your patience. And with that, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.